T-minus 10. United Nations Headquarters, Manhattan, New York. At Billy Kendrick's suggestion that New Kerguelen's second shelter might house still-functioning replicas of the AI knowledge repositories the messengers thought of as their elders, Leisha's eyes widened instantly. His lack of eyebrows made this one of his less endearing facial reactions, but once again, Dan couldn't stop thinking about how almost human Leisha really was. Despite the untold distance between their home planets, the differences were measurable in inches, quite literally when it came to height and waist circumference, and even less so in terms of the ever so slightly wrong relative placement of the messenger's facial features. "You hadn't thought of that?" Billy asked, more gently than the words alone may have suggested. "I hadn't thought of it," Dan said, "but I am now." Godfrey blew air from his lips. "God, can you imagine? We would be bypassing the technical difficulties of Elder Revival. No one else knowing about it means there can be no political difficulties, and if the potential upsides aren't the biggest that one mission could ever provide, then I'm a goddamn monkey's uncle." It was rare to see Godfrey as animated like this when the emotion coming through was a natural and positive one, like excitement, rather than the more common performative anger he liked to throw around when cameras were pointing at him. "We must go," Ding agreed. Dan narrowed his eyes. "He's hardly going to take you two," Godfrey chortled and looked at Ding, his unlikely friend. "I'm afraid he's right." "I know," Ding said, a very rare grin trying to break free. "We as in, well, Dan, and apparently Billy Kendrick." "Apparently," Billy said, trying not to give too much away. He disliked both Ding and Godfrey for all kinds of reasons, not political in any ideological sense, but rather based on their shared penchant for strong-arm tactics, media manipulation, and militaristic foreign policies. "Can you believe it? Me? All those years on the sidelines, ridiculed, hounded out of every job I found after I started talking about everything that's come true since then. But here I am." "Speaking of which," Godfrey mused, "where does Dortlu Tepe fit into this? Leisha, do you know what I'm referring to? Have you seen the carving? Because if we're thinking about the possibility, however slight, of there being other aliens in that shelter, perhaps they are the same other aliens that Billy's little pillar carvings have brought to light." "He knows we found something because I just told him," Dan replied, "but he hasn't seen it." At this, and with Leisha somehow seeming not just quiet but uneasily so, Billy gestured to a large screen at one side of the table and asked if it worked. "Do you have the images?" Godfrey asked after confirming that it did. Billy rose to his feet and walked towards the screen, taking this as a yes. He checked every few paces that the cable painlessly connected to his finger still had enough slack to enable further movement, and it always did. Once at the screen, Billy pulled a small memory stick from his pocket and looked for a slot that would accept it. The screen had one, and the power button was just as easy to find. As the screen powered on and Billy navigated through its input sources one by one, Dan paid attention only to Leisha. The images would be remarkable, and Dortlu Tepe in general felt like a piece of Earth's puzzle that hadn't received the attention it merited in recent days, given everything else that was going on. Right now, though, Dan knew that Leisha's reaction to the carving, reflecting what, if anything, it could mean for life on New Kerguelen, and particularly in the context of the second shelter, was by far the most important thing to watch. "Jesus," Godfrey blurted out. Despite his better intentions, Dan simply couldn't help but glance at the screen for a brief second. He saw exactly what he expected to see based on the testimony he'd received from impeccable sources, but that didn't reduce the effect of seeing such a familiar scene occurring between a human and an eerily alien alien. This height difference certainly wasn't measured in inches, but rather several feet at least, with the visitor's greatly elongated skull being just as difficult to take in. It could almost have been a cartoonist's caricature of Dan's meeting with the messengers, he thought, with the differences exaggerated for artistic effect. It inevitably crossed his mind that he actually might be looking at an artistic work, in the same way that people in 10,000 more years might dig up a novel and take it as fact. But it was simply too prophetic to be dismissed so easily, and likewise wasn't a vague image of something that could look like an alien if you squinted just enough and held your head at just the right angle. Even the exaggerated caricature didn't make sense in the context of considering that the ancient visitor from above may have been a messenger like Leisha, because its far greater height than the human was completely at odds to the reality that an average modern man was several inches taller than Leisha. Dan also knew that even earlier humans, and certainly those who called the Mediterranean region home in that era, wouldn't have been shorter than the messengers in any sense worthy of being so starkly highlighted in a visual depiction. There was no definitive way to be sure that the human wasn't a child surrounded by others of the same young age, Dan supposed, but that seemed like splitting hairs. As it turned out, Dan was able to discern the nature of Leisha's reaction almost immediately, despite being involuntarily transfixed on the screen. A few seconds proved enough to draw Leisha towards the screen, where he gazed up close at a being that seemed alien to both species present in the room. "Well?" Billy asked in a soft tone. "Do your people have stories of beings like this? The cable is very..."
"Too familiar,"
Leisha interrupted without looking away, reading Billy's thought before the final word was even out. Dan gulped, stood up, and walked to Leisha's side. The cable was more than long enough, as Billy and Leisha's movements had shown, and Dan took this for granted as he strode forward. He placed his free hand on Leisha's shoulder, tearing the alien's attention from the screen at last. "Leisha, what do you think you're looking at here?"
"I don't know," the alien admitted. "Dan, I don't know."
The helplessness these words conveyed reverberated in the air for several seconds until Billy Kendrick spoke up to break it. "Well, as nice as this table room is, we're not going to find any answers in here." Although fully agreeing that it was time to make a move, Dan wanted to clear up a few final things before leaving Earth for his hopefully brief but entirely unpredictable trip to New Kerguelen. "What else did the crew find with all the equipment they took up last week?" he asked, unsure whether Leisha or Godfrey was more likely to have an answer. The former had conversed with the alien mothership's crew, while the latter had conversed with the leader of the shelter-finding human crew. One of them surely had to know something above and beyond what had already been relayed. Ding cleared his throat before speaking in what Dan felt was an inappropriate and tactless tone.
"You know, Dan, that our crew was testing the external atmosphere. They conducted countless tests in the past 6 days, and all of them tell us that New Kerguelen's great shelter does nothing. We do not know what that means, but every single reading points to the same conclusion. Either the great shelter is no longer necessary, or it never was. Our crew, who spent months on that planet, sighed strongly towards believing it never was."
"Based on what?" Billy asked. "What data could we have to support this? It's too speculative to be worth anything."
"I did not say there was data supporting it," Ding replied. "I said they sighed towards believing it."
Dan shook his head. "Leaving aside the fact that there's just no angle that this makes sense from, I still don't think we can be absolutely sure the messengers don't need the shelter. Leisha, you told me last time I was on New Kerguelen that any air you can breathe is air I can breathe, right? But do you know if the reverse is true? You could easily be more sensitive to certain atmospheric variables than we are, and even to some we can't detect, let alone measure."
"I'm tired of not knowing these things," Leisha lamented.
There was no sigh, and he had no brows to furrow, but the exasperation was there for all to see.
"In this building we have tried, and I acknowledge your respective efforts. In Buenos Aires, too, we planned to continue. But now? Now is our moment to step forward together into a future of new knowledge, shared knowledge, and one which brings not only deeper understanding of each other, but deeper understanding of ourselves."
These were noble words, and ones Dan wholeheartedly agreed with. His whole focus, however, was currently on finding a solution to Piper's problem. The second shelter was a new avenue to quite literally explore, and even if the answers lay elsewhere on New Kerguelen, It was the discovery of the second shelter which set the wheels of his imminent visit in motion by destabilizing the planet's society, its known society at least, and necessitating Leisha's request for his presence. "I'm ready," Billy said, equally keen to hurry things along. Helping Piper would have been his priority too, if he absolutely had to identify one, but the prospect of finally visiting an alien planet after dreaming of the day for so long was taking most of his mental attention. Billy tried to stop himself from getting carried away when his mind dared to dream that he might even be present when a team of messengers ventured into the uncharted world beyond their great shelter and towards its mysterious counterpart. "Dan?" Leisha asked. Dan returned to the table to pick up his small bag, which contained a Greater X-3000 he didn't expect to find any use for, but wanted to bring along for the ride due to some unshakable hunch that he should. Whatever was on his person or in his hands would be taken with him during the teleportation-like journey to Leisha's waiting craft, he correctly assumed. Since the same was true of Billy, and since leaving the footage of Dortlu Tepe's lone excavated pillar on Earth would do little good, Dan encouraged him to fetch his memory stick. Without asking why Dan thought this would be useful and how an alien world could be expected to have USB ports and HDMI adapters, Billy grabbed the stick and put it in his pocket. His view was similar to Dan's with the Greater X, and both knew it. "We might as well bring them, just in case."
"Are you going to take me back to Beijing?" Ding asked.
"And me back to the Gravison?" Godfrey chimed in. "Sure, it's just down the street, but emerging from the UN in the middle of the night could raise a question or two, don't you think?" Leisha agreed to both requests, not quite admitting that these issues of logistics had slipped his mind, but likewise doing little to suggest they hadn't.
"Godspeed, Dan McCarthy," Godfrey said while removing his cable and placing it on the table. "Good luck, all of you," Ding added, doing the same.
Neither Dan nor Billy saw Leisha remove his cable, but after a flash that still shocked their eyes while lacking the same all-out disorienting effect it had once delivered, they noticed it lying on the table.
"He moves fast," Billy said.
"If you're just noticing that now, you think slow," Dan retorted with a friendly laugh. The two placed all of the cables back into the table-mounted device, more to keep their hands busy than for any deeper reason, and when this was done, they had no time for anything else. Clearly in no mood to hang around, Leisha was back, alone, within less than a minute. With their earthly items in hand and their unearthly cables stowed away, Dan McCarthy and Billy Kendrick took two of the deepest breaths of their lives. Before it even came time to exhale, they were gone.